Accession number 12274, Reel 1.
Captain Fancourt, Reel 1. Could you tell me, first of all, where you were born?
I was born at Harbin, near Birmingham, in 1900.
What did your father do for a living?
My father was one of four brothers, all of whom served in the army. He was the youngest, and he joined the 5th Lancers in India in 1869.
So how did you come to be in the Navy? How did you decide to go in?
I'll come to that. He served his 35 years in India and retired as a Brigadier General in 1901. He had quite a distinguished career in many respects, and my family had a connection with the Navy as such, going way back to his uncle, who was Admiral Devereux Fancourt, who was served with Nelson at Agamemnon, in the Agamemnon at Copenhagen in 1802. That was the only connection that our family had with the Royal Navy.
Did you always want to go to sea?
No, I don't think so. My first connection with the Royal Navy was from school at Felixstowe. I was at a prep school, and we used to go to the docks at Felixstowe, where the destroyers used to come in and coal ship, and we thought this would look rather fun, and we always took an interest in the various destroyers there. At the time I was at Felixstowe, I was mildly interested, but no more than that. But one day my father said to me, in 1912 this was, "Would you like to join the Navy?" And I said, "Oh, well, yes, I think I probably would." Basing my opinion on this destroyers coaling the Felixstowe dock. And so I was sent up to Osborne for the interview examination, which I passed. I was sent up to London, for the interview, and then I passed that and went to Osborne as a naval cadet on the 1st of January 1913.
When
the war came in 1914, our term was the senior term at Osborne. All of the Dartmouth College cadets were sent to sea in the reserve fleet, and we were sent on to Dartmouth with ourselves and one term above us. And we served at Dartmouth just the 1 year instead of the normal 2 years, and we were appointed to ships in the fleet from the 1st of January 1916. I joined the battle cruiser Princess Royal with three other cadets of my term, and we were lucky to join the battle cruiser fleet because it was considered rather cachet to be in the battle cruisers.
In what sense? Can you say in what sense it was considered to be cachet?
Well, they were fast ships and big ships, and they were the cavalry of the grand fleet, really. That's the one way of looking at it. Anyway,
did people admire Admiral Beatty?
Oh, Admiral Beatty was a splendid chap, you see. Everybody knew Admiral Beatty. He was a great character. And
what did people think of him?
Oh, splendid fellow. He always had been. He'd most unique character in many ways, and he was the best product of an Anglo-Irish, really. Bill Beatty was a splendid man. And he had a wonderful way with him. And anyway...
Did you ever meet him?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. He flew his flag in the Lahn, but it was very badly damaged at Jutland, and he shifted his flag to various other battle crews. He came to us for a short time once, but I met him socially, because Lady Beatty had a house at Aberdare, which is, you're a Scotsman, you know, just by the further forth, by the bridge there, North Queensbury. And she was there, and we were asked, two snotties, I was one, I can't remember who the other one was. The other one was a fellow called Orr Ewing, who was a very nice fellow, the Princess Royal, and we were asked to get tea and, I suppose, what else we did, played games or something other. But she was very charming to us, and the Admiral was there, and he was playing tennis, or whatever it may be, and we had a honour and glory of meeting the Admiral and his wife.
Was he kind or overbearing?
Oh, no. Very, very kind, very good chap. I had various friends in who served with him, and he was an ideal Admiral, David Beatty. He handled the politicians beautifully. He really did.
What way?
Oh, I think he made a name for himself, and I think he stood up to them and told them where to get off. He was probably the finest First Sea Lord we ever had, really. Splendid man. Anyway, the Princess Royal went to war in a big way soon after I joined. She two or three months on and off pretty regularly. And then the Germans were working up for something. There was activity going on all the time in Cuxhaven and the German ports, Kiel and the like, and eventually they'd been raiding the coast. The battle cruisers, German battle cruisers, had come out and bombarded the northeast coast of England once or twice, and they were very nearly brought to action, but they got away. It was generally bad weather, one or the other. However, in May 1916, they really came out to do business, and the battle cruisers were Forsyth, together with the fifth battle squadron, which the four QE class, and the Grand Fleet was up at Scarpa, and the Germans were reported to be out, and they met off the Skagerrak, the Jutland coast there, in the afternoon of the 31st of May, and the cruisers engaged, and the Grand Fleet came down full speed. The battle cruisers led up and engaged the German battle cruisers, and the our ships were not very successful in that way. They weren't so hostile, well built as the Germans were. And we had this nasty habit of blowing up. And the Queen Mary was next to stand on the line to Princess Royal, the Lion, Princess Royal, Queen Mary, and Tiger. Queen Mary blew up after about a half an hour, 40 minutes of action, and she just like that.
Where was your action station?
I was in the Q turret, which is the midship turret. work here. We had a little thing called a numeric, which was triangle forces, really. You worked out an angle, and you gave the control officer the rate of change of bearing, that sort of thing. That was my little job. But we...
Could you see anything from the turret?
You couldn't see anything from the turret at all. The only people who see out of a turret is the turret trainer and the gun layers. But they don't see much because we had director firing, and you had a little follow-the-pointer instrument, which didn't necessarily mean that the gun layer had to look out at all. But you had a deputy gun layer who looked out, and the turret officer looked out. But when there was a spell in the action, about 6 o'clock, I should think, we came out of the turret. We were on the quarter deck, having a look. We saw a ship with bow and stern just sticking up, and nothing else, and a destroyer standing by, and we thought, well, yeah, we sunk one of these. We all shouted with glee and delight, but unfortunately it was the Invincible who'd been sunk about half an hour before, and we came right past her. We didn't notice the Invincible then. We thought it was the Germans, you see, but it was very unfortunately, it was Invincible.
How did it affect morale when you heard it was the Invincible?
Well, we didn't find out until later. We went back the turret, and the action continued. We were engaged up to 8:30, 8:45 at night. All those things didn't come out till later. In the meantime, the other third battle cruiser to be sunk was the Indefatigable, which was the battle cruiser, the stern of the line in Beatty Street. That is when he made the comment, seems to me, that all our ships seem to be badly built, they're blowing up, he said to his flag captain. He commented something to that effect. However, when the darkness came on, the fleets formed up and the flotillas collected themselves and so on, and then, as far as we were concerned, we didn't get any further action. The destroyer flotillas had a big set to at night, but they more or less got through it almost by accident into the German fleet. And a lot were damaged or sunk. But the battle cruisers and the Grand Fleet didn't get into action at all after that afternoon engagement. And
did everything go smoothly in your turret? Did everything go efficiently?
Yes, our turret worked very well. Unfortunately, the A turret, which is the Marines' turret, which is the foremost turret in the battle cruiser, they had a breakdown, self-inflicted, I think. I think somebody did something wrong. But anyway, it was out of action. I don't remember A turret being hit, but or is it B turret? Anyway, one of the foreign turrets. We were all right in Q turret. The next turret had a direct hit on the barbette, which is the beast in which the turret sits on, a great big thick lump of armour. And that blew a great lump of it across the gunhouse and killed a lot of people. The turret was just like that.
Sticking out.
Completely out of action. So at the end of the contest in that afternoon engagement, we had only two turrets in action, which A turret and my turret, A and Q. B was out and X was out.
What did people think of the performance of the German Navy in the battle?
Well, we did this. I imagine this kind of thing. You think about it at the time. You know, that all comes out later when you analyze what they were doing. In point of fact, the German battle cruisers took an awful lot of hitting, and our shells were bad compared to the German shells. They often exploded on contact instead of armor-piercing and getting inside. No, they only lost one battle cruiser, which was the Derfflinger, wasn't it? Speaking without the notes, I think it was. She only lost one. The others were very badly damaged, mark you. They were hit like billow, but they were damn fine ships. About that.
How frightening was the action?
Oh, you aren't frightened. You were excited, and the whole guns crew and all given, and bang, bang, bang. And oh, no, it's a great phase, like being at a football match, you know. You watch your side to win, you know. Think about casualties and disasters until later.
Did the action seem to go on for a long time, or did it seem very short?
The engagement started about, without notes, I can't tell you exactly, about 4 o'clock. I was on submarine lookout at 3:30. And as I was just going down to get my relief, or my relief guard that came up to let me go down and have my tea, the action stations were sounded off the double, drop everything, rush to action stations. And that was at about 3:40 in the afternoon. And I think we fired. The last engagement was rather a hurried affair in semi-darkness about 8:30. So the whole period we're talking about was only 5 hours.
But did you have a sense of it going on for a long, long time?
No. Everyone had to get busy and clear up the mess as soon as we stopped firing.
Did the ship look an awful mess?
Yes, rather. And there were 100 casualties in the Princess Royal. We had 30 killed, I think, quite a lot in the gunhouse of X turret, and there were 2 or 3 hits in the between decks and that. But the engine rooms, boiler rooms, they were all right. And quite a number of casualties on the forged guns crews who were on the upper deck. The sickly armament, we had men manning him. They didn't have a fire, they never got close to anything, but they certainly were in action.
When the call to action stations came, did you realise it was the real thing?
Oh, well, we'd always hoped it was going to be. I mean, we'd been to action stations so many times, many occasions, but we were always hoping that we were going to get into action. It was the thing we'd all, the fleet had been waiting for and looking forward to all the time, you see. So that, it was splendid news. We'd all double away cheerfully to get on with the job.
Who was in charge of the turret?
My turret?
Yes.
Oh, it's a very nice fellow called Bertie Mayo, Lieutenant Mayo. Very nice chap. In fact, I was his divisional snotty, and he was very, very kind to me, and I was very wet and very young, but he was the kind of bloke that you could help you and never unkind to you.
What did you think of your immediate superiors on the
Princess Royal? Oh, they're a fine lot. Fine lot. Oh, very, very fine lot of chaps, really, looking back. Most of them went on in the service one way or another. The gunnery lieutenant became an admiral. A very nice chap, P.T. was. I think they were the product of the Navy of that day. Nothing much wrong with them.
Can you tell me about going back to port after the battle?
Well, that was rather tragedy in a way. We got back into Rosyth, and the Admiralty had issued a statement which was There were other details regarding the German losses and what the Germans had, which wasn't very much, really, and the number of ships they had out, and a very long list of British casualties, the three battle cruisers and two armoured cruisers and eight destroyers and that sort of thing. And it looked as if the fleet had trouble hiding, you see, really, when this was published in the papers. And we went ashore and Rosyth and found people rather inclined to say, well, what's the Navy been doing? I thought we were going to blow them out of the water. And you come back here and you seem to have lost a lot of ships. The Germans didn't seem to have been damaged very much. That was the impression. And the Admiralty then issued a day or two later a sort of corrective memo about it all. But it was very badly handled. I'm quite sure of that. It was quite sure of that. In point of fact, the Germans were very badly knocked around, really. And they never came out and had it again. So that was really the answer, wasn't it? So one way and another...
What?
My experiences of Jutland were, looking back, very exciting.
What do you remember about the burial of the dead?
Oh, yes, we better touch on that. When we were clearly unable to engage the enemy again, they'd got in through the Horn's Reef Channel, got back to Cuxhaven without being intercepted. The on our way back to Rosyth, we had the unhappy task of burying our dead, which amounted to about 30, I think, or thereabouts, and they were put over the side in the normal manner of burying the dead in the Navy at sea, and that was the end of that.
Was this an emotional occasion?
Oh, it's obviously is. It is, but life was pretty busy there. I didn't have a lot of time to settle down and think about it all.
What was morale like after the battle?
Oh, good. Except that I think the chief thing was annoying. It was annoying that the Grand Fleet didn't get into action. You see, the Grand Fleet didn't get into action. The only people who really got into action were the battle cruisers and the four QE class fast battleships. The Grand Fleet, one division's Grand Fleet, or one of eight battleships, had got into action about 6:30 in the evening, just to get in towards dusk, and they only had about half an hour, 40 minutes firing, and the mist had come down and the visibility was very poor, and 2/3 of the Grand Fleet never fired a shot, you see. So that battle cruisers and the 5th Battle Squadron felt they'd done their job and the Grand Fleet had missed the boat. That was a sort of low-deck attitude anyway, and I think most people would take that attitude too.
What do you think of the performance of the 5th Battle Squadron?
5th Battle, well, they did jolly well, you see. They got a game, but Warspite was very nearly lost. She had her rudder damaged, and she turned a complete circle with the German High Sea Fleet engaging her until she could straighten herself out. It was very dicey do. It was stern of us. The battle cruiser's gone on ahead. Beatty was criticised by some of the critics of the battle for not keeping the battle cruisers so closer to the 5th Battle Squadron. They were rather, they were a sort of semi-detached unit. They weren't in line. They were within 3 or 4 miles, that sort of thing, I think, most of the time. And when the battle cruisers had gone on after losing two of their number, Warspite turned round with her lot to follow the battle cruisers, follow Beatty's motions, and then they got hit then.
Do you remember the 5th Battle Squadron arriving at Rosyth from Scarborough?
Yes, I do. They just came down just for the day, a day or two before the action, because the 3rd Battle Cruiser Squadron, which was the Invincible, the Inflexible, the Indomitable, they'd been sent up to Scarborough to do gunnery practices. That's why they weren't with Beatty when the Invincible was sunk, because they were on their own. And Beatty had been given the 4 ships, the 5th Battle Squadron, to take their place whilst they were at Scarborough, you see.
Was there any ceremony as they arrived?
No. I only just remember them. They anchored below the bridge, I think, so one didn't see them, really. We were up above the bridge in the 3rd or 4th, and I think the 5th BS were below the bridge. I didn't remember much about them, really, there.
So you didn't visit them?
Well, I suppose I did at the time. I suppose we knew they were there, but they weren't in where we were anchored, anyway. They were below the bridge, I think I'm right to say. They came down a day or two before the time the other 3 battle cruisers went up to Scarborough.
Did you have any friends from Osborne or Dartmouth in the 5th Battle Squadron?
Oh, yes. We had six in the Malaya, I think it was, and 2 or 3 in the Valiant. And we had 6 of my term in the Queen Mary, who were blown up, and we had 4 of my term in the Indefatigable. They were blown up. So that we had 10 in the battle cruiser fleet, and we had 4 more of our Sardis in the defence, which 6, I think they were, who made a rather serious blunder. They blundered across the bows of the Lion and heavily engaged by the German leading ships, and defence blew up. So that we had, my term, we had 6, 10, 14, I think 16 of our term were killed or jostled.
Did you have any personal friends who were in the 5th battle?
Yes, yes, very much so. In fact, to digress a bit, I'd just been over to the convalescent hospital at Osborne, the Isle of Wight, which deals with all kinds of, mostly service people, 7 months civil servants. They go there as convalescents. And my wife, who'd been ill for the last year or two, got accommodation there, and I went over to stay with her. And funnily enough, when we got there, we found one of my term mates there too, a very nice chap called Shaw, Robert Shaw. We delighted to meet each other again, and there we were for a week at this place where we'd started life, and there we were, 2 old buffers of the 92, we meet up again together. And we're walking around this the lovely grounds, you know, there around Osmond House, and there are lots of great big trees of various sorts, big conifers and all those kind of things. And quite a lot of them were